Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals and welcome to our visitors today. We have two cases on our docket at 1:30 for oral submission and another case at 3 o'clock. I understand that counsel have announced their appearance and the time that they wish to argue. So if you all are ready, we will proceed. Clerk will call the first case.
The court will now call the State of Texas versus Tino DeFranco. May it please the court. Tommy Dahoney will argue for the state. Mr. Charles Hams will argue for the appellate.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. This is a state appeal, and I'm here on behalf of our elected criminal district attorney, Sharon Wilson. We ask that this court reverse and remand the case so that we can prosecute this second offense for DWI. This is a probable cause case, but I want to touch on a couple of things first before I talk about the probable cause for arrest, just to kind of clear off the table, because those perhaps could be dispositive if the court were to go in that direction. The first one is the last thing I talk about in my brief, and that's the failure of the trial attorney to identify in a routine fashion the defendant through the officer Cochran, who testified. And we're all familiar from looking at records, and often you see the prosecutor point to the defendant in the courtroom and say, "Officer, can you identify him, and would you name what number they are, and can you state what they're wearing or the color of their shirt or something?" That didn't happen. We've said that all along. I will, as I said in my brief, of course we want that to happen as a preferred practice, but it is absolutely not a legal requirement in a motion to suppress for a stop or an arrest. And I've cited this court to standing cases, but also we know that the movement has the burden to show that they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. When you're dealing with a stop that involves the person being seized, or you're dealing with an arrest, which also involves the person being arrested, then that's part and parcel of the claim. And in this case, Tino DeFranco said he was improperly stopped, or in a general sense, there's an improper stop or an improper arrest. Now, in this situation, in his motion to suppress, he cites, and that's included in the beginning of the findings of fact, the judge quoted them, and that's on the back of my brief if anybody wants to look at that. Always helps me to look at something at the same time. But the litany of all of the constitutional amendments that might apply to this scenario are cited, and then the actual motion to suppress contests the arrest. And then it also contested oral statements that were made. At the very beginning of the hearing, however, the parties agreed that it was a warrantless stop, and then they limited the testimony. And I have page 5 in front of me, and Mr. Sierra said, "Your Honor, the defense counsel and I have been in email communication, and he's only requesting that the state produce sufficient probable cause for an arrest." So both of the precursor issues that I wanted to mention before talking about PC, I think, need to be considered also in regard to that, or in colored by that limitation. So the bottom line is, under Rakes and standing cases, it's not the state's duty at a motion to suppress to point out that it's the same person who was stopped or arrested. Those are the two times when someone would be detained in body. Now, obviously, the example of an opposite situation, say there was contraband, a bag of dope found in the middle of a console, and in that situation the defendant has to hit the stand and say, "That's my dope." But it's counterintuitive that the defendant has to say, "That's not me," unless we were dealing with something that goes against finding of all of the elements during trial beyond a reasonable doubt, and that would be identity. So a mistaken identity scenario is something for guilt innocence, not for motion for new trial. And of course, motion for to suppress. And of course, motion to suppress is the issue here. So identity, unless there's a question about that, I just want to make sure there's not any confusion. And also,
I have a question. Do you think it's necessary for us to reach that if, okay.
No, absolutely not. And in light of the trial court's conclusions, especially the last three that all narrow in and show he was looking at whether or not there was probable cause for a DWI arrest and whether or not the officer had stated that, I think that clears the path too. So no, it doesn't need counter But sometimes those little things pop up and just want to take care of them. The other is something that I didn't brief. It's an issue typically called scope of the detention. And in reading the defense brief, I was trying to remember the page, there's three cases that are Court of Appeals cases, not our Court of Appeals, but one is a Texas DPS case versus Rodriguez, I believe, is the defendant. And the defendant asserts that there has to be a causal link between the reason for the stop and the arrest. That can happen in reality, but that's flat out wrong as a general proposition. Think of it this way. We have a situation here involving a license plate that's been canceled. Let's say that our officer Sampson had run the license plate following behind the defendant, stopped him for the plate being canceled, and then during that stop learned about the fact that he was DWI. The two have nothing in common. The fact that you haven't put your plates on, unless you're going to say that you've been intoxicated for the 3 years that you forgot to put the plates on, which is not the case in these facts, they don't have any connection. We have, you know, traffic stops, quite frankly, are the bread and butter of law enforcement, and often whatever traffic stop, even equipment violations that happen, end up giving us a case where we find out it's a defendant who's wanted for murder, which, of course, the two are not close in time or events or anything. There's no connection. So the causal link cases that he is citing to involve when you have a stop, and in those cases, I think most of them were speeding, and whether or not there's a blossoming into reasonable suspicion to continue the detention. And so that's why, even though it really doesn't spell out scope of the detention, that's what those are. That's the legal issue involved. Okay, in scope of detention, we've been given guidance by the United States Supreme Court on a bunch of cases in the last few years. Illinois versus Rodriguez was last year, and is it Cabela, I think? Illinois versus, a lot of Illinois cases, but the dog sniff cases. Now, those are continued detention for something other than DWI. They're continued detention for a dog sniff. But what we know from those cases is that, yes, during the middle of a stop, factors can come about and rise into a reason that you want to continue. And so what are those limits? And in this situation, if you look at the video, you get the timing spelled out in front of you. This officer, Officer Cochran, goes out of his car, goes up to the defendant. He asks him a couple of questions. He doesn't learn about his insurance, and the guy seems to be confused about that, can't find it, whatever. And the officer says, well, stick it out the window. I'm going to go run you on the computer. Essentially, he doesn't say those exact words, but that's what he does. And he goes back in his car. And there's a few minutes in there, and then the officer very cautiously calls in because he's confirming what he just learned, and you hear on the video, that's what I found, because he found out that the license plate was canceled. Okay, that's during the usual normal stop information. At this point, the officer is learning new facts that give him reasonable suspicion to continue this detention. This is not a situation where he stops somebody for speeding, he gives them the ticket, and then he's like, oh, well, let's get you out here to do some field sobriety tests. That's not even our facts at all. Watching that video shows that by the time the officer got back in the car, he might have had an inkling at that point. In fact, I think his assist shows up because he calls an assist because he's looking at somebody driving around with plates that are 3 years canceled. And he says to that person, well, number one, we got a license plate problem, it's canceled. And number two, he might be intoxicated, I don't know. Now, what were those might be facts? Okay, speeding can go both ways. Like Arvizu, the United States Supreme Court case that talks about innocent conduct, speeding may be something you do because, by golly, you were late to get to court. Hopefully not. Speeding could be something you do for a variety of reasons. You may not even have a motive for doing, but speeding can also be something you do late at night because you've been impaired just a little bit. You know, I venture to say that speeding with, as we find out later, a truckload of alcohol, probably not a good idea, maybe shows a little impairment too. So he had an inkling from that. Then also we have testimony at the hearing, and there's a finding of fact that confirms the officer's testimony that the officer smelled alcohol when the defendant was in the truck. So there's another factor. So we have those before the officer even goes back to the car. And once he goes, or truck, once he goes back there and talks to DeFranco, then he learns instantly about the fact that this guy knows he's been driving with his canceled plate. He's been doing it for 3 years, and they're in the pocket behind his seat, and he tells the officer all about it. So there's no question that this officer was aware at the time before the arrest, thinking of State versus Duran and those kind of issues. You can't come in and legitimize something with facts you learn after. But we know that the officer knew those facts about the canceled plate before he even got the guy out of the car. Okay, then we also know he didn't have insurance at that time, because when the officer shows back up, he still doesn't have his insurance. Okay, so we have, not even talking about DWI, we have the canceled plate and the insurance. This was not a situation where he was going to give him a speeding ticket and let him go. He's got an illegal plate and no responsibility proof. So then also, when the officer is talking to DeFranco at the window when he goes back, at that point, he says, "You've been drinking." And he sees this, you never see pictures. We don't have pictures of that, sorry. But apparently the back seat is loaded with alcohol that the defendant says, contrary to what he said earlier, that he was going home, that he has to deliver to his place of business. Now, that may be later, may not be, but that's another little calculus. All these things go into this officer's mind. He's not letting that truck go without the right plates and without the responsibility at that point, the responsibility proof. But he also thinks, this guy who says he had a couple beers might be impaired. So then he gets him out to do the field sobriety tests. Now, scope of detention is absolutely merited here because of all three of those offenses, not just the DWI and not just the canceled plate. Now, also, it's interesting that that's being argued now, again, turning back to what I mentioned about the limitation, because what Mr. Sierra, the trial attorney, says is that he's only requesting the state to produce sufficient probable cause to make an arrest. In other words, the state withdrew the opportunity to go forward with things about reasonable suspicion, and reasonable suspicion is what supports a continued detention. So there's a little bit of an estoppel in even making that complaint, but our record still is good, whether or not it was raised properly below and litigated coming up. If it was our claim on that, we wouldn't have it preserved because nobody talked about it at the hearing. But we still have those facts that show there was a valid reason for Officer Cochran continuing the detention. So those are the two side issues that I don't want us to be distracted with. This is an easy case. I think I've wrote out a little syllogistic list in the brief, and finding of facts 16, 17, and 18, which all mirror the police officer's testimony, show that there was not a match on the plates, show that the plate was canceled, and that the defendant said, "Hey, they're here behind my seat." Those show the facts supporting the conclusions of law made by the trial court, conclusions 1 and 2, that you can arrest somebody for a traffic violation and it's a violation when the plates and the registration don't match. With that in mind, I will reserve the rest of my argument for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dahoney. Mr. Hamm.
May it please the court, honorable justices, opposing counsel. My name is Charles Hamm. I'm here on behalf of Tino DeFranco, the defendant and appellee in this case. I have served as the trial court attorney as well as the appellate lawyer, so I'm fairly familiar with the underlying facts and the background on this case. Just to pin down in a little housekeeping on the underlying facts of the case, Tino DeFranco is an owner of a well-known bar on West 7th Street of Fort Worth, Texas. He was coming home. He was pulled over. Now, it's important to note, in contrast to what the state may have argued, that he was pulled over for speeding, 39 and a 30. in Blue Mound Road by Officer Cochran. The officer, once investigating the speeding, does indicate that there is an expired license plate on the vehicle, but a correct registration sticker on the window. And then it's also on the video and indicated that Mr. DeFranco has the correct license plate matching registration sticker in the vehicle, but they don't get it to that. He just never mounted it on the car. The state argues or brings up quite a bit that there was alcohol in the vehicle, and there was alcohol in the vehicle. And in fact, in the suppression itself, I asked Officer Cochran if any of that alcohol was open or if he charged Mr. DeFranco with open container, and he did not. This turns out to be alcohol that was being transported from work, or one way or another it was being moved. The officer does indicate he smells alcohol once he sticks his nose in the vehicle, but once Tino's out of the car, there's no alcohol found, and that is contained in the reporter's record. In deferring to the Honorable Judge Vanover, who made the ruling on this motion to suppress, Judge Vanover indicated, and it's identified on page 36 of the reporter's record, which is in evidence, that he found no testimony from Officer Cochran amounting to probable cause for the arrest, and that nothing presented by the officer led to the conclusion that defendant was intoxicated. Now, that's important. The judge does not indicate or talk anything about failing to maintain financial responsibility, which is an arrestable offense, or failing to maintain correct registration plates, whatever the actual law is, and that is, in fact, an offense. We won't argue that. But what is important to note is that the motion to suppress, paragraph 1, indicates that this is an offense for driving while intoxicated. Then also goes on to identify that what we're trying to suppress was any evidence gained following that arrest. The state, Mr. Sierra and I did stipulate that this motion itself was only for the sole cause of determining whether probable cause existed for making an arrest. Now, that being said, in the suppression hearing itself on page 25, I asked the officer, quote, "So as we stand here, the reason you arrested Tino," speaking of Tino DeFranco, "was driving while intoxicated, correct?" End of question. The answer is that is correct. I follow with no other infraction. The answer there is, well, he had the canceled plate, but that's not why I arrested him.
But you agree that you've just stated that the no insurance was an arrestable infraction?
Yes.
And then you also agree that the license plate issue was an arrestable infraction?
It certainly warrants a detention in the state of Texas, yes.
So if there are three arrestable infractions, just because the police officer picked to articulate the wrong one, how does that support suppression?
Well, this leads to perhaps my broadest argument of all. Mr. DeFranco was charged with and arrested with driving while intoxicated. The case we presented in the motion to suppress was dealing with the offense that was charged and the complaint against him. Later on down the road, if we were to allow an officer or the district attorney, prosecutors, to later resurrect facts or look into facts that may have been involved in any traffic stop or any altercation between officers and individuals, we open a Pandora's box, one which defense counsel cannot adequately defend the case. If that were the case, my motion to suppress would have had to indicate driving while intoxicated. We're also attempting to suppress and indicate whether probable cause existed for a litany of offenses that may have existed.
But it seems to me that this situation happens frequently when a defendant is arrested for DWI and the police officer doesn't actually view him driving. And so when a suppression motion is filed and the burden shifts to the state to show justification for the warrantless arrest, the police officer saw the person publicly intoxicated committing the offense of public intoxication, and it seems like the case law uniformly holds that if the police officer could arrest him for public intoxication, then it doesn't matter that he said he arrested him for DWI and that he's actually charged with DWI.
And Honorable Justice, I think in delineating the difference between that circumstance and the circumstance here, correlating, in your example, the officer approached for public intoxication or had an incident for intoxication, as related to our circumstance, it was for speeding. Then later investigates and obviously is allowed to investigate whether facts existed for driving while intoxication. Yes. In your instance there, on the DWI or the public intox arrest, if the state can later conclude that perhaps the defendant did not have a driver's license in his pocket, no valid DL, to later argue, it again opens up that Pandora's box to defense counsel, but we don't know what all to argue in a motion to suppress. We're simply there for the facts and the charges as applied and what information is presented against the defendant. In our case, driving while intoxicated. To allow the state to come back and find any certain particular incident in the relationship of the stop and make a probable cause arrest because he could have in that instance, and then still deny the suppression based on the driving while intoxicated, where the trial judge did find that the officer in the state lacked sufficient probable cause to arrest for DWI, just opens that box. Now, it's important to note that in this instance, I asked Officer Cochran, did you cite for failure to maintain financial responsibility? His response was no, or I don't recall. Did you cite him, that would be a class C citation, for registered plates? His answer was no, or I do not recall. And that's contained in the record.
But isn't the standard not the subjective intent of the officer, but the objective facts that were present at the scene? And the objective facts that were present at this scene is no proof of insurance, which is a jailable offense, or arrestable offense at any rate, the improper license plate, which is also arrestable offense. Those are the objective facts. So his subjective intent is really not even the test, is it?
I don't know exactly how to argue that, Justice Sutterth. I will tell you that on the subjective side, the case law does indicate what we usually bring up is the subjective intent of an officer's motive for pulling over or motive for having an interaction, and later find out what the ruling is. In this case, and in these circumstances, when the officer himself indicates that, no, I did not arrest for those potential offenses, again, what it does is disallows me as a defense counsel to perhaps delve into those issues. What if there was an argument to the registration on this license plate? Just because failure to have a registered license plate is a crime or is a violation of the transportation code, we didn't delve into whether Tino's and facts actually applied to that. We never did. Do we need to go back and have another motion to suppress just on expired registration plates? Never questioned the officer other than...
Well, whether or not there was a defense really goes to whether he could be convicted of it, not whether there was probable cause.
That is correct. And at the same time, when I asked the officer, what did you arrest for? It's DWI. That's the officer's objective approach to the arrest, not his subjective intent, motive, or any other reason for the stop.
But it also ignores objective facts in the record.
One could conclude that, yes. We would ask that you uphold the trial court's ruling.
I have one more question for you. Do you think it's necessary for us to address the issue that the defendant wasn't identified at the suppression hearing?
I do not. Thank you.
Hey, police the court. Okay, basic criminal law 101 involves cases coming into our office, and then we actually determine, regardless of whatever the arrest was for, what we're going to prosecute for based on the facts of the arrest. And when we indict someone, that gives the notice to the defense attorney that that's the crime they need to defend. Okay? And how many times this court has seen case after case, and you know, but most of my experience is DWI or intoxication related and vehicular. So let's think Shante Mallard, a case we all remember, the woman who hit the homeless man and left him embedded. They didn't arrest her for felony murder. They arrested her, I believe, for a variety of other things. Or how about this court's opinion in Strickland, and I can't think of his first name. I'm thinking Jonathan, but I don't think that's correct. But it and Lomax, L-O-M-A-X, were the first two cases that held that someone arrested for felony DWI could be prosecuted for felony murder. And remember, that was a case where when you use felony murder, whether or not you can have a case that doesn't have an intent and take it up that way. That was very new when we did that. That was cutting edge. They weren't arrested for felony murder. What the person's arrested for has to be based on the Fourth Amendment's objective reasonableness. And Crittenden, which predated Wren for Texas, wasn't the first time that that came out. Illinois versus Gates, and not dealing with stops, but Terry v. Ohio, they talk about the Fourth Amendment requires an objective test. So really, it doesn't matter what Officer Cochran said was his reason, or actually he said, I didn't arrest for the canceled plate. What he says wasn't his reason. It doesn't matter. That does not go into the computation of objective probable cause. There is an exception, and I would argue that it's actually outside the Fourth Amendment, but when you're dealing with the Corbin right sort of community caretaking issues, then the officer's motivations come into play. So those are the only exceptions. You know, this was I thought our trial attorney presented a really great motion to suppress, because it takes a while, I think, usually, to look at facts and realize that what came in the door is not what you argue, and you argue something else, and it's clear that this prosecutor stood down and chose not to argue reasonable suspicion and probable cause for DWI because he just realized he had the goose with the golden egg. He had ironclad probable cause with the traffic code violations or equipment violations. So he kind of shifted that from what the officer said, and that's all he argued. And just to be clear, yes, there were other violations that were shown in the record, like the insurance, but he did not argue that. And of course, under State versus Mercado, I'm bound by what he did argue. So that's the canceled plate and the registration not matching with the plates. And that's why the trial court on findings 4, 5, and 6 made a mistake and for some reason believed that the motivation of the officer controlled. It does not. Unless there is any other question, we ask for this case to be remanded so that we can prosecute. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you both so much for your arguments and your briefing here today. They've been helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and we'll wait for the next lawyers in the next argument to move forward.